Masechet Baba Metzia, Daf Mem Tet. The topic is reneging on a deal after a verbal commitment. So we start with the story. Daf Kana Yahavi Lezuze Akitana. Lasof Aikar Kitana Atale Kame Derav. Daf Kana sold linen. And so someone, a buyer came and wanted to buy some linen, and he gave a down payment to Daf Kahana, let's say $10 for a $100 sale. But did not yet pull on the linen that he is buying. So the sale was not effectuated. And after a little time, the price of linen went up. So Rav Kana wants to renege on the deal because now he can get a better price. So he goes to Rav and asks him if that's permitted. Amar le b'may din kitat zuze hablehu v'idach devarim ninhu devarim en bahem mishu mechusere amana. And so Rav says, the amount that you got already, the $10 of down payment, that you got the money, so it's only right that you give him the linen for that amount. However, the rest of it, the other $90, that was just words. He didn't give you money. You didn't give him the product. It was only a verbal commitment. And if you renege on a verbal commitment, that is not called acting in bad faith. It's permitted. Ditmar, Devarim, Rav Amar en behem mishum mechusere amana, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, yesh behem mishum mechusere amana. And this is in fact a machloket between Rav in Babel and Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael. Rav said that changing your word is not considered an act of bad faith. Rabbi Yochanan says it is an act of bad faith. Now we're going to challenge Rav. Metibe, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Matabu Domar, Hin Sedek, Valohin bichlal efa haya. The question is, how come the pasuk says that you have hin sedek and efa sedek? These are different types of measurements, and your measurements should be proper. A volume measurement, you shouldn't have one that's too small when you're selling, or too big when you're buying, then that you are cheating the other person. But the question is, why does the pasuk have to say both hin and efa, if one is included in the other? Ela lomar lecha shehe hen shelecha sedek velav shelecha sedek. Rather, efa is the main one that's teaching regarding a value measure, and the hin happens to be the same as the word yes, hen in Aramaic, hen, yes. So Pasuk is teaching not only that efa, that your volume measure should be proper, but also that your yes should be a yes and your no should be a no. Whatever you say, you should fulfill your words. So this is a challenge against Rav, who said that a verbal commitment is not binding, but here it says that it is binding. It's improper to go against your word. Abaya answers, no, this midrash of your yes should be yes and no should be no, that teaches that you shouldn't be hypocritical. You shouldn't say one thing even though you're thinking the opposite. That's what's not allowed. But as long as when you say yes, you mean yes, and then afterwards the circumstances change, then that's okay. So you can't say yes intending that, oh, I'm never going to fulfill this, right? And you mean something else entirely. You shouldn't be lying. However, Rav Kana was not lying. When he made the sale originally, he was planning on going through with the sale because that was the right price. Then circumstances changes. The price of linen went up. So now he says, oh, I changed my mind. That's okay. Rav, according to Rav, that's okay. And what's prohibited here is only lying or being hypocritical. Me'etibe, another challenge. Rabbi Shimon Omer, We have a braita, according to Bishimon, we saw this braita already, that even though from the letter of the law, if someone pulls on a talit, then he acquires the money. If I'm buying a talit from you, once I pull on the talit, so then my money gets automatically acquired. But the other way around does not work. If I pull on the money, you do not automatically acquire the talit, because pulling on currency does not effectuate a sale. However, since it feels not effectuated, so we can renege on the deal. However, even though that's the letter of the law, now we quote from the Mishnah that says, But the rabbis say that Hashem should give a punishment to you who gave a punishment to the generation of the flood and the generation of Migdal Bavel. He will give a punishment to someone who does not stand upon his word. So you see, this is a challenge to Rav. Here it says you have to follow your verbal commitment. Otherwise, it's a curse, even though technically the sale didn't go through, but still it's a curse. So what is Rav going to say about that? And we answer, Tana Ehi, you're right. This Rabbi Shimon certainly agrees with Rabbi Yochanan, or rather Rabbi Yochanan, the Amora, agrees with Rabbi Shimon that you have to follow your verbal agreement. But Rav, he could follow a different Tana, as we see in the following Mishnah, Tana Ehi Ditnan. This is a Mishnah later in the Masechet on Daf 83. Maaseh b'Rabbi Yochanan ben Matya, Shamar libno, Seus cholan upalim, halachu pasak lemezonot, kushaba esel aviv, amar lo, b'ni afilu ata oseh lahem se'u kis'udat shalomo b'sha'ato, lo yasata yedecho v'atcha imahem. Shehen, b'nei Avraham Yisrach v'Yakob, Ela, ad shelo yatchilu b'melacha, se ve'emor lahen amenat she'en lachem alai, Ela pat v'ketnit belvad. It's a story about Rabbi Yochanan ben Matya, who told his son, go and hire some laborers, right? You go in the, with day laborers, they hang out next to Home Depot, and, you know, go hire some. And so he went, and they agreed on a price, and the son included lunch. Right, he said, come and you can have lunch. But he didn't specify what kind of lunch, what's going to be served. And so he came to his father, he said, I hired these people, this is how much we're going to pay them for the day, and I included lunch. And the father said, my son, even if you make for them a meal like King Solomon at the height of his glory, you will not have fulfilled your obligation to them, because these are children of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and so anyone of this people is are like royalty. And so if you just say, I'm going to give you lunch, then you have to give them you couldn't possibly give them a sufficient banquet. You didn't specify what you're going to serve them for lunch. Rather, son, go and before they start working, go and tell them, listen, I meant on condition that it's just a very plain lunch, just bread and beans. That's all we're giving you. Because otherwise, these are human beings. These are part of the Jewish people. So they're royalty. So you have to get, they could demand, oh, you have to give us everything. Okay, so this is the story. What you see here is that he changed his mind. So ve'isa kadatech devarim yesh behen mishum mechusara amana hechiamale zil hadar bach. So if you think that a verbal agreement is an agreement, then the son already made a verbal agreement. So I'm going to give you lunch. So that means he has to give them a maximum lunch. So if you think that going against a verbal agreement is a lack of faith, well, how could Rabbi Yochanan ben Matya do that? Evidently, Rabbi Yochanan ben Matya says, you can change from a verbal agreement, and Rav can follow Rabbi Yochanan ben Matya. But we reject this. Shane hatam de paalim gufayhu lasam chadataihu. May tamam edayad ayed al abu samach. No, in that case, it's different. The worker, the Rabbi Yochanan could change his mind because the workers themselves don't rely on the son. Why? Because they know that the son is making a deal, but the son's going to have to go and get approval from the father, right? So they know that this is only a tentative deal when the son gives it to them, and so they don't fully commit until the father says so, because they know the son's a young guy and that the father's going to may change his mind. So in that case, the father can change his mind. But otherwise, maybe Rabbi Yochanan thinks that you cannot change your mind. We ask, wait, if that's so, that the workers don't rely on the son, so how come Rabbi Yochanan ben Matya had to say, go tell them before they start working? Even after they start working, he could say, listen, you know that deal that we made? That was just with me, but you didn't rely on me anyway. And now my father said that we're only going to give you bread and legumes. So why does it have to be before they started working? He could even change his mind after they started working. And the answer is, Hitchilu b'melacha v'adai samchi da'atayhu. Amru, v'amad amad kameh de'abu v'nichale. No, once they start working, then the workers will commit themselves and rely on the son's word. Because they'll say, oh, well, I guess the son asked his father, and the father said, yeah, that's good. Give them full maximum gourmet lunch. And so once they start working, they assume that the father agreed to it. Then the father no longer can change his mind. But only before that, he can change his mind. And therefore, there's no proof from here that Rabbi Yochanan ben Matya said that you can change your mind. This could be an exceptional case because the workers themselves did not commit themselves based on the son's word. And so there is no proof from here that, in fact, that the machloket between Rab and Rabbi Yochanan is a machloket Tanaim. Now we ask against Rabbi Yochanan. Mi amar Rabbi Yochanan hachi? Did Rabbi Yochanan say that you cannot change from a verbal agreement? Rabbi Yochanan said that someone says to his friend, I'm going to give you a gift. He doesn't give it to him yet, right? But verbal statement, it says, I'm planning on giving you this car. I'm going to give it to you as a gift. He can change his mind. Now, yes, what do you mean, yachol? Of course he can, right? Because there was no transaction here. So certainly he has a legal right to change his mind. So what does he mean? Ela mutad. He's permitted. There's nothing wrong with it, right? There's no, it's in good faith. He could say, oh, listen, I was planning on giving you a gift. But you know what? Now I need the car. I'm not going to give you a gift anymore. So you see that according to this, Rabbi Yochanan says, you can change your mind from a verbal agreement. Contradicts what he said before. So the Papa explains that Rabbi Yochanan agrees, if it's a small gift, then you cannot change your mind. Because then the recipient is relying on it. Oh, he said he's going to give me this that hammer of his, so I'm relying on it, and so you have to give it. But if it's a large gift, then the recipient knows that he might change his mind, right? If I go and I say, I'm going to gift you a house. So the recipient says, oh, thank you very much. Now the recipient knows that this depends on a lot of things, right? Who knows what's going to happen? And maybe he'll change his mind. Maybe he'll need it. Maybe he'll give it to someone else. So since the recipient never totally relied on the verbal promise of a gift, not a promise, just a verbal statement of a gift. So there was something big, he can change his mind. So when the Rabbi Yochanan said over here that you can change your mind regarding gift, it was talking about a large gift where the recipient does not even consider that a done deal. But if it's a small gift or a buying and selling, then one cannot change one's mind after a verbal agreement. And this statement, this answer, that the Papa said really makes sense. Da amar Rabbi Abhu, amar Rabbi Yochanan. Yisrael shamar leben Levi kor ma'aser yesh li lecha biyadi. Ben Levi rashay la'asot to teruma ma'aser al makom acher. Yi amat bishlam ala ma'aser mihadar be mishum hachi rashay. Eli amat ma'aser mihadar be amai rashay ishtekach deka achil tebalim. So look at the statement, also in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that let's say a Yisrael has a whole bunch of produce and he has to give ma'aser rishon to a Levi. So he goes to a Levi and he says, listen, I have this cord measurement of produce and I separated it as ma'aser and it's yours, right? It's in my possession, but I'm going to give it to you. So that's a verbal statement that says, I'm going to give it to you. That Levi can rely on it and he can take, if he has other produce somewhere else, and Levi has to give terumat ma'aser to the Kohen. So he can designate that this kor that the Yisrael promised to give to the Levi, he can designate that as terumat ma'aser to exempt a whole different pile of tebel and make that permitted. Now, that's the statement of Rabbi Yochanan said. Now we analyze. If you think that one cannot renege on a deal, then that's why this permitted to do that. The Israel, since he said, I'm going to give you this kor, so the Levi can rely that gift will be delivered, and therefore he can use that as terumat, is designated as terumat maaser, to exempt another pile. But if you say that the Israel is permitted to change his mind, then why? How can the Levi rely on that? What if the Israel ends up changing his mind? Says, listen, I said I was going to give you that kor, but I decided to give it to a different Levi. And now, in the meantime, if the Levi designated that kor as terumat maaser for other produce, that produce now will be tevel because that terumat maaser that he designated turns out not to be his, and so now he's going to be eating tevel. So how could we allow it? So you see from here that it must be that Rabbi Yochanan thinks that you cannot renege on a deal that's a small amount. And so a kor is a relatively small amount. And so you see that even though Rabbi Yochanan said, in general, you can renege on a gift, But that's only if it's a large gift. If it's a small gift, like a quart of produce, then you cannot renege on the deal, and that's why he can rely on it. So isn't that a good proof that Rabbi Yochanan really follows what Rav Papa said? We say not necessarily. No, maybe this is a case where the Levi pulled on that produce, and then after he made an acquisition on it, then he said, "Listen, I don't want to hold it. Can you hold it for me as a watchman?" And so that's why it was in the hands of the Yisrael. But there was already a transaction, and so the Levi can guarantee. Once you make a transaction, then certainly the Yisrael cannot renege on it. Maybe that's the case, but we say no, that can't be. Yihachi emasefa netano leben Levi acher en lo alav ela tar'omet. The sefa of that baraita says if the Yisrael decided, after promising it to one Levi, that he said, no, you know what, I'm going to give it to a different Levi, then the first Levi only has a complaint, but he has no legal claim. If you think that the Levi actually made an acquisition on it and said, here, hold it for me, well, then he has a legal claim, not just a complaint. Once he pulls it, that's his money. Rather, it must be, as we said, as I said above, and it is a good proof that he did not pull it. Instead, it's the case that we said, the Israel says, listen, I have this Maaseh Sheni, I'm going to give it to you, right? But the Levi did not yet pull on it. Nevertheless, the Levi is permitted to designate that as Terumat Maaser for grain that he has elsewhere. And he can trust that the Israel is not going to change his mind because it would be against good faith. To change his mind, and so you see that Rabbi Yochanan agrees that if it's a small gift, then it's improper to change his mind, and so he's not going to do something improper, and therefore it's permitted. But if it's a large gift, then Rabbi Yochanan says one can change one's mind because the recipient doesn't rely on it. Another story. One guy gave money to a sesame seed seller, and he said, here's money, right, because I'm going to buy the sesame. But he didn't pull on the sesames yet. And so the price went up, and the seller said, no, forget it. We have no sesame seeds here, right? We're all out. Take your money back. I'm not selling it to you. La shekel zuzeh. Ignub. The buyer did not come to collect his money. And in the meantime, it got stolen. Who's responsible? Atu lekamed Rava. They asked Rava for a judgment. Amar le kevanda amari lach shekol zuzach vela shekalit. Lami baya shomer sachad de lahave ela afilu shomer chinam name lahave. So Rava said that the seller of the sesames is not responsible, because not only is the seller not a shomer sachar, he's not paid to watch the buyer's money, he's not even a shomer chinam. Why? Because he said, take your money, I have your money here, I'm not selling you the sesame seeds, you didn't make an acquisition to the sesame seeds, I'm reneging on the deal because the price went up, I don't have sesame seeds, go away, take your money. So once he says, take your money, he said, I'm not being a shomer for it. And therefore, the buyer loses out on the money. The seller did not have to pay him. However, the rabbi said to Rava, wait, but doesn't the seller deserve a curse? A Misha Parah curse? And Rava says, yes, he did. Yes, he does. Because he reneged on the deal. It was a verbal commitment. And the money was given to him. So he deserves a Misha Parah. So both of those can be at the same time. He deserves a Misha Parah, but he doesn't have to repay the money that was stolen. He could decide if he wants to repay the money. If he doesn't want that curse, he could pay the money. So that means he's upholding his side of the deal. Oh, you gave me the money, and now it got stolen. Okay, I'm going to give you back your money, or give him back sesame seeds. That he can do. But he doesn't have to, because from the letter of the law, he said, take your money. So he's not a shomed, and he's permitted to go against to renege on the deal. But if he does, he deserves a Misha Parah. So he can decide which one he wants, a curse, or have to give that amount back. Amar papi amar li ravina. Lididi amar li ahumi rabbanan v'rav tavot sheme. V'amri la rav shemuel bar zutre sheme. Now, we have a tradition from Rav Papi in the name of Ravina that a certain rabbi said, and it was two versions of what his name was. And in this story, we're going to deny the authenticity of the end of the story we just said. So here's the story. De'i havu yahavi le kol halala da'ama lahave ka mishane b'dibure. So this rabbi, let's go with the first attribution, Rav Tavuta was his name. He was a very honest person, and even if you would give him the entire cosmos, he would not change a word, he would never lie. So Ravina is relating to Rav Papi that he heard the following story from Rav Tavut, who never lies. And here's the story. Bididi hava obadahu yoma panyadim alesha beta hava v'ata hava yatibna v'ata hu gabra v'kayababa. Rav Tavut says, I had a situation where I was sitting on one Friday afternoon before Shabbat, and a certain person came and knocked on, and came to my entrance. Amar li itlach shum sheme lezabune. And the guy said to Rav Tavut, do you have any sesames to sell? Amar La, no, I don't have any. Amali leheved hanach zuze pikadon gabach taha chashchali. And so that guy said, listen, Shabbat is starting, and I have some money here, and I'm not going to be able to get home in time. Can I deposit it with you, and you will take care of it until after Shabbat. I'll come back to get it, because it's getting dark soon. Amri le ha betach kamach. And Rav Tavut said to the guy, my house is before you. In other words, you can put it in the house, but at your own risk. I'm not accepting responsibility as a shomer. So the guy did. Otbinu bebetai, went and put it somewhere in the house. Vignu ben, it was stolen. Ata le kamed rava mar le kol ha betach kamach. And the case came to Rava, and Rava says, if the owner of the house just said, my house is before you, then that's not a commitment to watch it, not as a Shomer Sachad and not even as a Shomer Chinam. And therefore, Rav Tavut, the homeowner, is not responsible to pay for it getting stolen. Amri le veha amaru le rabanan le rava iba'e le lekabule ale mi shepara. However, the guy said to Rava, but didn't the rabbi say to, in the case, remember the case that we just had before, didn't the rabbi say to Rava in a similar case that the person who reneged on the deal and denies now should get a mi shepara? And Rav Tavut said, no, that never happened. V'amar li lo hayu devarim me'olam. So you see, Rav Tavut, who's a very honest person, he would never lie and change a word. He said that ending of the story never happened. And therefore, I don't deserve Amisha Para. Even though in this story, it doesn't say that he reneged on a deal with the sesame or anything. It must be that it was some kind of similar case. Nevertheless, he took this money, but he was only watching the money, but he didn't accept responsibility to watch the money. And so he says, didn't the rabbi say that he should get a curse? And Rav Tavut says, no, that never happened. The rabbis did not say that, and such a person does not deserve a curse. Next part of the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon Amir Kol She'akesef Biyado Yado Ala Al Yona. Unlike the Tanakhama that says both parties can change their mind if only the money was given, but not the product was not pulled. Rabbi Shimon says, no, whoever has the money in their hand, that they have the upper hand, and therefore only, let's say, the buyer gives the money to the seller, only the seller can change his mind, but the buyer cannot. Let's analyze. Tanya Amar Rabbi Shimon, Ema Tai Bizman Shekesef HaPerot Biyad Mocher. When can someone change their minds? Only the seller, when the seller has both the money and the product. He didn't deliver the product yet. Aval Kesef Biyad Mocher HaPerot Biyad Lokech Eno Yachol Lachazor Bo Mipnei Shekaspo Biyado. But if the money is in the hands of the seller and the product is in the hands of the buyer, then nobody can change their mind because his money is in his hands. What does that mean? Biyado? Biyad mocher hu. What do you mean the money? The money of what? The money of the buyer is in the buyer's hands? It's not. It's in the seller's hands. So what does this mean? Biyado? Ele mipnei she'deme kaspo biyado. What it means is that the value of the buyer's money, meaning the produce, is in the buyer's hands, is in his possession. So in this case, because the buyer now pulled on the fruit he has in his possession, that finalizes the deal. So then certainly nobody can renege on the deal. Now we ask, Bishita, isn't that obvious? Well, once if I give you the money and I pull on the produce, obviously you can't go back. Amaravach, maskinan kegon shaita aliyah shelokach muskeret biyad mocher. Tama maitakin rabadan mishicha gezera shemma yomar lo nisrifu chitecha baliyah hacha birshutet lokach ninhu. I nafla deleka beones iu tarach umaiti la. So Rava explains, here we're talking about a case where the upper story of the buyer is owned by him, and he rents it out to the seller, and the seller stores his produce up there. So and then that seller is sells some fruit to the buyer, but now it's actually in the buyer's possession because the buyer owns the upper story of the seller, because he's renting out to him. And therefore, look at the logic. Why did the rabbi say that you can only acquire something by pulling on it? Because we make a gezerah. If the buyer didn't pull on it and it remains in the seller's possession, even though on the doraita level, just giving the money would effectuate the transaction. But then what if it goes on fire and then the seller is not going to save it? But that logic does not apply in this case because the upper story actually belongs to the buyer himself. And therefore, if there is a fire, even if no one's responsible, it just happened. So the buyer will go and he will save his food. So in this case, even if the buyer didn't pull on it, he just gave the money, so that's sufficient, because on the Doraita level, giving the money makes it his, and since, even though he didn't do an acquisition on it, since he owns the upper story, he will go, he has access to it, he will go and put the fire out, so the Gezerah does not apply in this case. Last story, someone gave money to buy wine. The buyer gave money, but he didn't pull on the wine yet. And now the buyer, he heard that there's this vizier, this governor from the house of Parzak, that's his name, and he's going to come and he's going to appropriate it for himself. He's a kind of thug. He just takes things. So now whoever owns the wine is going to lose out on it. So the buyer goes to the seller and says, listen, give my money back. I don't want the wine. He knows that if he buys the wine, it's just going to be confiscated by this Parzak guy. So he reneges on the deal. After all, he didn't pull it yet, so he has a legal right to. So here, that's the buyer that's reneging on the deal. So they came to Rav Chista and says, is that allowed? And he says, yes. Just like the rabbi said, that you have to pull in order to acquire something. They said that to the seller. And before pulling, the seller can renege. So too, they said the same thing for the buyer. It doesn't make sense that to give the seller a right to renege, but not the buyer. And therefore, if the buyer did not yet pull on it, he is allowed to renege on the deal, meaning he's not following the halacha like Rabbi Shimon, but rather like Chachamim. And now we begin the next Mishnah on the topic of ona'ah, of exploitation, overcharging or undercharging. And so we're going to see how much is someone allowed to deviate from the market price. You can never get exactly the market price. It's always a little bit more, a little bit less. It fluctuates. But there's a certain cutoff point at which this is called overcharging. Ha'ona'ah arba'a kesef me'asim ve'arba'a kesef la'sela shetut la'mikach ad matem utah la'chazir ad kedeh she'ar'eh la'tagad o likrovo. Ona'ah is when it's a ratio of 4 ma'av kesef out of 24, which is a sela. So 4 out of 24, which is equal to 1/6. If the overcharge, it could be undercharge also, but let's say overcharge, that the seller is charging too much. If it's less than a sixth over, then that's a good sale and they cannot renege and cannot ask for the money back. That's within the margin of error. If it's more than a sixth difference, then the buyer can say, oh, I want to go back on the deal. I want my money back. He can void the deal. If it's precisely 1/6, then the buyer can choose whether he wants to void the deal or get the 1/6 money back. Ad matay mutar lachazir? How long does the buyer have to return the item? It's not forever. What's the return policy? The amount of time it would take for him to show a merchant or a relative who's more familiar with the market prices and can evaluate it. So how long will that take? Let's say an hour, right? He has to go down to his friend's house and show it to him or to the merchant or to a different merchant and show it to him. And then by the time he comes back and finds the seller and he says, oh, you overcharged me. So that's it. That's, let's say, 1 hour. If he takes longer than that, then the sale is final. Okay, that's Tanakama. Horarbi tarfon belod ha'ona'a shemona kesef me'asimvarba kesef la'sela shelish la'mikach v'samchut tagare lod. Rabbi Tarfon was in Lod, and he gave a ruling that Ona'a is not 1 out of 6, but rather 8 out of 24, which is 1/3. And the merchants were so happy because now they can overcharge a little bit more, and it's still permitted. The sale is still final. A third rather than the sixth. They can, that's twice the amount that they can overcharge, and they can make more money. So they were very happy. But then Rabbi Tarfon added that the buyer has the entire day to return the item. He bought in the morning, not just 1 hour, but he has the whole day. He can come back and say, hey, you overcharged me. And so the merchant said, oh, you know what? Forget it, Rabbi Tarfon. We don't want your kula, and we don't want your chumrah. Right? Leave us alone. And they went back, and they followed the ruling of the chachamim. In other words, having a shorter return policy is much better, because most people, they may not check right away. They're going to go do other things, whatever. And then by the time they get home later, then their friend will check and say, oh, they overcharged you. So they can make more money by remaining within the 1/6 smaller bracket, but also having the policy that they can only come and return it within an hour instead of all day. Itmar, Rav amar shetuk mikach shaninu, Shmuel amar shetuk ma'ot nami shaninu. Okay, there's a machlok between Rav and Shmuel, how to calculate the sixth. Rav says it's a sixth of the value of the item, the market value of the item. But Shmuel says that I agree with that definition, but I add a definition that of a 1/6 of the money that's paid. And we're going to show examples. Shavi shita bechamsha, shavi shita beshiva. Kule amala pligi debatar mikach azlinan veona havya. If we follow the amount of the item, so let's say the item is worth 6 and he pays 5. Or the item is worth 6 and he pays 7. So in that case, it's 1/6 more or less of the value of the item. In that case, Rav and Shmuel agree that that's the point of ona'a. If it's more than the more or less than that, then the other party can nullify the transaction. At least the buyer can nullify the transaction. If it's precisely that, then he can ask for his money back. If it's less than that, then the sale is valid. So that everybody agrees on. Ki pelige shaveh chamsha b'shita v'shaveh shiva b'shita. The question is, what if the item is worth 5 and he pays 6? Or the item is worth 7 and he pays 6. So in this case, it's the sixth is the amount being paid is the sixth, and the item is worth 5 or 7. So in that direction, Lishmuel damar batar ma'ot azinan idi v'idi ona ahave. According to Shmuel, that says we go not only by the item, but also by the amount paid. So all of these cases would be considered ona'a. However, l'rav damar batar mikach azinan sheve hamsha b'shita bitul mikach havya shavi shiba b'shita mechila havya. But according to Rav, that says we only follow the amount of the item, a 6 more or less than that. Well, in that case, if you had an item worth 5 and you sell it for 6, that's 1/5. And 1/5 is greater than 1/6, and therefore the sale can be voided. Whereas if the item is worth 7 and he pays 6, that's 1/7 of a difference regards to the item, and therefore that's within a 6th, less than a 6th. And so that would be a mechila, meaning that's a waiver. Anything within a six, the parties forego, and the sale is valid. So in other words, for Rav, the ratio is precisely 1/6, looking at the market value of the item itself, a six more or a six less of that market value. According to Shmuel, it ends up being anywhere between 1/5 and 1/7 is considered the space of ona'ah. So for Rav, ona'ah is exactly 1/6. It's just one price point is going to be the exact ona'ah, and which you can ask for your money back. Whereas for Shmuel, it's actually arranged. The price point of ona'ah is not a point, but a range between 1/5 and 1/7. If it's the ratio is greater than 1/7, that's a smaller amount, so then the sale is good. If it's less than 1/5, that's more money, and then you can void the transaction between 1/5 and 1/6. The buyer can either void or ask for their money back. Okay, and now Ushmuel amar ki amrinan mechila bitu mikachecha deleka shtut mishne stadim ava hechadika shtut mishad echad on ahavya. So just elaborating more on Shmuel, when we say that the amount is waived on if it's smaller, or it's nullified if it's greater, that's only when there is no sixth from two sides. But if there is 1/6 from only one side, then that is ona'ah. In other words, what I just said, if you calculating either way, neither one of them are a sixth, so that would be less than a seventh or greater than a fifth, that would mean neither of them are a sixth. So that's considered either this nullified or it's waived. But if you have a sixth in only one direction, but not the other, so that would be between those two points, and then that would be the point of ona'ah, in which the buyer can decide to either ask for the money back or void the transaction. Okay, and so now we're going to have some challenges. Tenan, ha'ona'ah arba kesef, me'esim arba kesef la'sela shetut la'mikach. We're going to quote our very Mishnah that says ona'ah is 4 out of 24, which is 1/6. My love, the zaben shave asrim be asrim ve'arba'a ushma mina shetut ma'ot name shaninu. Is this not talking about a case where the item is worth asrim 20 and he paid 24? So we see that this is 1/6 of the money, right? Because he paid the item is worth 20 and he paid 24, so this is 1/6 of the 24 is 4, right? And that's 4 off. If it was 1/6 of the 20, then that would be a different amount. And so this proves Shmuel, doesn't it? And the answer is no. La de zabin shave arba esrim ve'arba be'esrim. No, it's the other way around, that the item is worth 24 and he paid only 20. So that's a sixth of the item. And therefore, this Rav can explain it that way. Wait a second. Minit anna mocher. If, in fact, the item is worth 24 and he paid 20, so who was exploited? The seller, right? The seller got too little. Just like there's overcharging on the half on part of the buyer, there's also underpaying, right? This buyer comes and says, oh, this is only worth 20. And the seller, well, I mean, usually the seller should realize he's the seller, he should be the expert, but not necessarily. If the seller doesn't realize the value of what he himself sold, so he is getting exploited. Now, ema sefa adma temuta lachazi b'kteshiyad ela tagad o likrobo v'amadam nachman lo shanu ela lokech v'amochel le'olam chozer. But try to read that together with the continuation of the Mishnah. How long can he, says he, who is it, that the buyer or the seller? Let's see. How long can he return it for the amount of time that it'll take for him to show the item that he bought, right? He has the item to a merchant or to a friend. And Rav Nachman said that who reneges during that time period? Only the buyer. The buyer has that restriction that he has to renege within, he has to take it back, return it within that hour. However, the seller can return it forever. So you see that the continuation of that of the Mishnah is assuming that it's the buyer that was exploited, not the seller. So really, you cannot read it like this. So back, so we have a question against Rav once again. Ela dezaben shave 24 be'20 utmanya. Rather, must be talking about where it, well, item is worth 24 and he overcharged 28. So it was overcharging, and it's the buyer, in fact, that was exploited. Okay, good. Tenan horad bitarfon belod ana ashmona kesef mesim varba kesef la sela shelish la mikach my love des event shit shave shit shit sere besim varba ashma mina shelish maot na meshaninu. We're going to go through the same question and answer now for the bitarfon's opinion, but it's going to end up being the same thing. So the bitarfon is taught in law that ona a is 8 out of 24, which is 1/3. So what's the case? Is it not that the item was worth 16 and he sold it for 24? Now that if the item is worth 16 in Rav's calculation, the 24 is 8 more, that's half of the value of the item itself. And see, that doesn't work for him, for that's not, it's not a third. So therefore this calculation only works for Shmuel, who says that we also not look at not only the value of the item, but also value of the money. And so here, it's he paid 24 for an item that was worth 16, so it is a third of the money. So that works for Shmuel, not doesn't work for Rav. Challenge to Rav. La dezaben shave 24 beshitzar. No, other way around. The item was worth 24 and he paid only 16. So that is 1/3 of the item. That's good for Rav. But according to that, mini mit ana mocher, who was exploited? It was the seller. He got too little money. He only got 16 for an item worth 24. Then try to read that with the continuation. Emasefa. Amar lehem kol yom mutar lachazor. Amar Rav Nachman lo shenu ela lokech, aval mocher leolam chozer. But the continuation says, Rav Nachman, Rabbi Tarfon taught them that he can return it all day. And Rav Nachman said about that, it's only the buyer that can return all day, but the seller can return forever. So you see that the continuation is not referring to a seller who was exploited, but rather the buyer who was exploited. So that doesn't fit with the interpretation we just said. Ela dezaben shave estim vad ba'abit latin utren. Rather, the Mishnah must be talking about a case where it was worth 24, and he charged 32. And so in that case, it's the buyer that was exploited. So that fits with Rav. And so Rav can answer that because it's the buyer being exploited. So it fits with the continuation and it fits with the ratio. It's 1/3 of the item itself and paid 32, right? And it fits with the wording also of the Mishnah, because the point is it's 8. He paid 8 extra out of the 24, which ends up being 32. Good. Tanya kevate de Shmuel. We have a baraita that supports Shmuel that we calculate the amount of ona'a both from the market value of the item and the money paid. Mishu tal alav yado al aliona. The Baraita says, whoever was exploited gets the advantage. Kesad machalo shave chamisha beshisha. Minit ana lokeach yad lokeach el aliona. Rasa omer ten li meotai o ten li ma she onito onitani. So the Baraita gives an example. If someone sells an item that is worth 5 and charges 6. So who is exploited here? It's the buyer. He overpaid. And so that case, the buyer has the upper hand and he can decide, since it's exactly on the sixth marker, he can decide whether to say, give me my money or give me my money back, meaning I'm canceling the whole thing, or give me the one coin that I overpaid and he wants to keep the item. He can decide. Machar lo shave shesh bachamesh minit ana mocher. But if he sold him something that's worth 6 for 5, so in that case he underpaid. So who got exploited? It's the seller. Yad mocher ala eliona rasa omer lo ten li mikachi o ten li ma she o nitani. In that case, it's the seller that can that has the upper hand, and he can say either give me back my item and I'll give you back your money and the sale is void, Or he can say, you underpaid and you have to pay me one more. Now, the second case in this Baraita would work either for Rav or Shmuel. So there's no proof from here because here the item is worth six and he paid a fifth. So that's 1/6 off, right? That's one coin less. So that's 1/6 of the market value of the item. And Rav would agree that that's the exact point of Ona'ah. The proof rather is from the Resha, where the item is worth five and he paid a sixth. So that's a 1/6 of the amount paid. So that's the opinion of Shmuel. So you see that this is a proof that Shmuel must be correct. And so therefore, this whole Baraita is a proof for Shmuel's opinion. So we have a Baraita that supports Shmuel. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen ve'amen.